Hi, everyone, and welcome to At the Drive-In. I'm Tamira, and this is a podcast where we talk about movies from the 50s to the 60s, and I look at things such as the plot, any themes, the characters, funny anecdotes, and pretty much anything worth mentioning, really. I apologize for not posting anything last week. I have to confess, I was a little bit too disorganized, so I didn't manage to squeeze one in the end. But today I'm back, and I'm going to be making up for that by looking at a movie that is immediately referred to when people talk about old movies, and it's basically the most famous old movie. I think you know what I'm going to be talking about, but anyhow, a common dialogue will unfold when you tell people you like old movies, and I'll go a little like this. So the person will say, okay, so what are some of your hobbies? And you'll answer, oh, well, you know, I really like watching movies, and they'll be like, really? Awesome, what kind? And you'll be like, oh, you know, I'm really into, you know, old movies. And then they'll ask, oh, you mean like Casablanca? That's the dialogue. And honestly, yes, the answer is yes. I definitely like watching movies like Casablanca because it is a great movie. But honestly, this is the question that we must be asking ourselves right now, because we've all heard about Casablanca. Even people who are not really that big on old movies, they know what Casablanca is. They can even quote Casablanca, which is amazing. But why is Casablanca such a classic? Casablanca is probably going to be one of the first movies you see if you like old movies, and chances are you're really going to like it. Then, as you go on exploring the old movie world and start discovering gems, you're going to come across Casablanca again further down the line, and you might be like me and have a moment of reflection and a little bit of perplexion as well, and you'll ask yourself, like, okay, why is Casablanca so famous? Listen, I apologize to anybody out there fuming at me for even asking this question. Maybe the answer is so obvious that it just seems silly to question it. But honestly, the old movie world is so rich that once you've delved into it a bit more, you discover some really great movies that are nowhere near as known as Casablanca, and they're not even remotely as famous as they should have been. The prime example that's coming to my mind right now is He Ran All the Way, which honestly, I think that movie was excellent. I think it was mostly because of the acting. Anyways, I'll probably talk about it one day. But honestly, like, no one would have heard of that almost. And then you have Casablanca, which everybody knows. So today we're going to be exploring what makes Casablanca so good. And we're also going to be questioning whether, you know, is it as good as everyone makes it seem? Before I delve into the summary of the movie, I just want to say that the movie came out in 1942, and it was directed by Michael Curtiz. It stars Ingrid Bergman, Humphrey Bogart, Claude Rains, Dooley Wilson, and Paul Henreid. And now, without further ado, let's jump right in. So the movie starts off with a voiceover explaining that right before World War II, many residents of occupied Europe dreamed of escaping Hitler's regime by going to the United States. The most popular way of getting out was through Lisbon. Portugal was neutral. But there was no direct route to get there. So instead, many chose to go via Casablanca, which was in French Morocco, which was at the time unoccupied. And the people who managed to get a flight to Lisbon from Casablanca were the Europeans who had quite a bit of money, because it cost a lot of money to get the papers you needed to get to Lisbon. So only the lucky ones were the ones who got to Lisbon and then could get out. And then the rest of the people had to wait in Casablanca for indefinite periods of time, trying to find a way to get out of there, trying to find the right papers, and have to provide the money which to actually pay for those papers, because they were super expensive. And humans just love to take advantage of other humans in difficult situations. So no one made it easy for them. No one gave them a fair deal. It was all super expensive and, you know, just normal shitty human behavior. So lots of people had to stay there for a long time. This is basically what the voiceover explains, and it kind of sets the scene as we find ourselves in Casablanca itself in December 1941. We learn that two German officers carrying important documents have been murdered on a train, and that the murderers were headed to Casablanca. The documents are letters of transit, which are papers that allow people to travel freely across German-occupied Europe. As you can imagine, these papers were extremely valuable. So we see a plane land, and out comes Major Strausser, a bona fide Nazi, who is greeted by Captain Louis Renault of Vichy France, who's played by Claude Rains. And this guy's pretty corrupt, and he's not subtle about it at all, so yeah, no one's really surprised. Strasser is there to investigate the murder of these Germans, and Renault tells him that the murderers will definitely be hanging out in Rick's Cafe America tonight, so they should look around there. This is where we're first introduced to Rick's Cafe. So the full name of the cafe is called Rick's Cafe American, and it's owned by a guy called Rick Blaine, who's played by Humphrey Bogart, and Rick is an American expatriate. Rick's Cafe is more of a nightclub, and it attracts all sorts of folks. So from Nazis to gamblers to refugees hoping to reach the US. Rick claims to be neutral, though we do find out that he ran guns to Ethiopia during the Second Italo-Ethiopian War, which took place between 1935 and 1937. And we also find out that he fought on the side of the Republicans during the Spanish Civil War. So although he claims to be neutral, he definitely seems like the hate Nazis kind of guy. So Rick's Cafe is jam-packed with all sorts of people. A man called Ugarte enters the cafe and starts talking to Rick, who's not very responsive, to say the least. He sort of grunts as a response. And Ugarte reveals that he has two letters of transit, which we assume are the ones gotten from the killed German officers. Ugarte plans on selling them for a boatload of money, and he asks Rick to hold them for him for a short while. Rick agrees, which honestly is a little beyond me, seeing as he's very adamant that he's neutral, and this doesn't seem like something someone neutral would do. But anyhow, he agrees to keep them for a while, and then Ugarte leaves. Rick and Renault then have a conversation, and Renault informs him that another reason why Strasser is in Casablanca is because of the arrival of a notorious rebel called Victor Laszlo, played by Paul Henrid, who has escaped the Gestapo several times by now and is hoping to finally make it so that he can leave Europe. Ugarte is arrested before he can meet with his contact that evening, and he dies in jail without revealing that Rick has the papers. We find out that his contact was Laszlo himself, who shows up in Rick's cafe with his wife Ilsa, who's played by Ingrid Bergman. Laszlo finds out that Ugarte has been captured and realizes that it's not going to be as easy to get away as he thought. Which probably wasn't going to be very easy in the first place, so now things got a hell load harder for him. Meanwhile, it is clear that Ilsa has met Sam before somewhere, and she goes up to him and she asks him to play a song called As Time Goes By. At first, Sam says that he doesn't know how to play it, but when Ilsa insists, he starts playing it. I think people who haven't even seen this movie know the famous quote during this scene, and pretty much all the other famous quotes from this movie. But it's really interesting because everyone quotes it as being, "Play it again, Sam," when in reality, that was never said. Those exact words were never said. The closest was, "Play it, Sam." It's like one of those really creepy Mandela effects where a lot of people remember something different than how it actually was. Like the fact that everyone remembers Darth Vader's line as, "Luke, I am your father," when in reality it was, "No, I am your father," which honestly is so much lamer if you ask me. But anyhow, it's really creepy, and if you're interested in all that stuff, I recommend looking the Mandela Effect because it's pretty disturbing. Anyhow, Sam plays a song, and Rick comes in about to go apeshit on Sam for playing the song which he asked him never to play again because of the painful memories associated with it, and he is shocked to see Ilsa. So it's definitely clear that they've had some sort of interaction before, to say the least. Nothing happens at the moment, but that night Rick gets a little too carried away with a drink, and he asks Sam to play the song, and that's when he starts recalling his affair and having flashbacks with Ilsa. We see a flashback of them in Paris, where they're very happy and in love, but they can't stay in Paris when the Germans invade because Rick is on the German blacklist. So they decide to take a train out of town, but Ilsa never shows up in the end, and Rick is effectively incredibly heartbroken at this. When Laszlo starts making inquiries about where the letters could have ended, he is tipped by someone that it's likely that Rick has them. Laszlo confronts Rick and asks him for them, but Rick refuses to hand them over, telling Laszlo that he should ask his wife why. Basically, Rick is being a bit bitter and vindictive. He wants to screw us a little bit over for what she did to him, which, you know, obviously was not nice to be left and abandoned like that, but she had her reasons, which we'll find out. But anyhow, it's not particularly admirable nor good behavior on Rick's behalf, but let's all agree that it's a very human reaction to someone who got deeply hurt by someone else. Rick and Laszlo's conversation is interrupted when a group of German officers start singing a nationalistic anthem in the cafe. Laszlo, because he's got a hell load of moxie, asks the house band to play the French national anthem. The band looks to Rick to ask for his permission, and Rick nods. So Laszlo starts singing loudly by himself, but then he's quickly joined by other patriotic people and people who aren't even French, and they just drown out the Germans. Strausser is obviously not very psyched by this, and he asks that Rick's cafe be shut down. When Ilsa finds out that Rick won't give them the letters, she confronts him. She asks him again, saying that without those papers, there was no way Laszlo would make it out of Casablanca alive. And then Rick again refuses, and Ilsa threatens him with a gun. But then she admits that she's still in love with him, and she explains that she fell in love with Rick in Paris because she thought that her husband had been killed in a concentration camp. While preparing to leave with Rick, she found out that Laszlo was still alive, and that's why she never showed up to escape with Rick at the train station. Rick eases up after hearing this, and they make up. He agrees to help Laszlo escape, even though Ilsa would be staying there with Rick. That was what she was planning to do. Laszlo, though, is arrested on petty charges after attending a resistance meeting. Rick talks to Renault and convinces him to let him go, saying that he'll be able to arrest Laszlo on a much more serious crime, which would be the possession of the letters. Renault agrees to this, so they let Laszlo go. But when Renault goes to arrest Laszlo again, he finds Rick pointing a gun at him, and Rick forces Renault to help him in Laszlo's escape. So they drive to the airport, and that's when Rick convinces Ilsa to board the plane with Laszlo, even if she still loved him. He told her that if she didn't, she would come to regret it bitterly one day. And Rick decides to let her go because he believes that Laszlo needs her by his side to keep on fighting the good fight and resisting, and that she could do much better with Laszlo than she could do with Rick. Once the plane is taken off, Strasser arrives, ready to give orders for the plane to turn around, but Rick shoots him. The police arrive, and Renault tells the police that Strasser has been shot and to, quote, round up the usual suspects, another very famous quote from the movie. And effectively, this lets Rick off the hook. Renault then suggests that he and Rick go and join the Free French, a resistance group, and the movie ends with Rick famously saying, Louis, I think this is the start of a beautiful friendship. And that, my friends, is Casablanca. Okay, so just a quick general comment before we get into the real analysis. I was thinking about this last night and I thought it'd be interesting just to mention it. You know why I think one of the reasons why Casablanca is considered such a classic? I think it's because the love story is so good. And yeah, that might sound super obvious, but honestly, it's hit me that with most of the movies I watch from back in the day, the love stories are just shit. I mean, you'll have a guy and a woman who meet like two times, and then they'll already be madly in love and ready to sacrifice everything for each other. There's no chemistry, there's no buildup. That's why sometimes it's hard to get into the movie, especially if the whole movie revolves around a loving relationship, because usually that loving relationship is so random and frivolous and it's hard to take seriously. It's true that in this movie, we don't get like a super big insight into their past relationship, but we do have that essential peak that already establishes their this loving and beautiful relationship, and you don't see that in many movies. So yeah, you do notice a particularly nice and loving relationship. It's also very interesting when you think that Ilsa's and Rick's relationship is considered an iconic movie romance when they actually don't end up together. But anyhow, those are just two little comments. And now to talk about the movie itself. So Casablanca was based on an unproduced play called Everybody Comes to Rick's, written by Marie Burnett and Joan Allison. The play was based on a trip to Europe made by the authors in 1938, where they came face to face with the rampant anti-Semitism, especially in their visits to cities such as Vienna. Many of the things in the movie are heavily based on actual places and people the authors came across. So Rick's cafe, for example, was based on a nightclub in the south of France, and Sam's character is basically a replica of the musician they came across in that club. So it's definitely based on real places and people. The making of Casablanca and the meaning it is imbued with cannot be separated from the context of the time in which it was made. So we find ourselves in Second World War, and many Americans favored the isolationist stance. And this sentiment is clearly manifested in the character of Rick Blaine, who claims to stick his neck out for nobody. Casablanca presents a fictionalized version of reality and the US's position in this fictionalized reality, reflecting on what the next step should be. In the end, Rick does pick a side and chooses to shoot Strasza to help Ilsa and Laszlo escape so that they can continue their resistance work, and this clearly served to state an opinion that the US should take a stance too, that they should interfere and fight against a power which was clearly more evil and the enemy. Casablanca also presents a motley of different people from different backgrounds and places. They're all showed hoping and waiting, stuck in Casablanca, wondering when they'll be able to get out. The uncertainty of each of these people reflected the state of the world during the war. Thousands of people were being displaced. They were having to flee for their safety, they were having to seek new lives, all the while waiting and hoping and wondering what would happen to them next. Another notable element in the movie is cinematography. There's a constant play between light and dark, which manifests the hope and the despair that comes along during wartime. Rick is usually presented half in darkness, half in light, and this is used to represent his two sides of being an idealist at heart and then a cynic, and also his need to make a decision before too long. Ilsa is often shown in shadow, which signifies her own struggle between a love for Rick and a duty to help her husband with the resistance movement. Laszlo is usually shown in bright light, which reflects his role as someone who inspires and motivates and who is courageous. Laszlo, unlike Ilsa and Rick, he has no doubts. He is 100% sure of what his duty is and he knows he's gonna do it. So cinematography in light and shadow would definitely in a really fundamental way in showing the personality of the characters themselves. There are a lot of little anecdotes that are just delightful when reading up on the movie, so I'm just going to comment on them now randomly, but they're definitely worth knowing. Okay, so I have to say, this isn't 100% confirmed, although Bergman did say it herself, but apparently there was a little problem with the height difference between Bogart and Bergman because she was a bit taller than him, and she said that during their scene standing together, he would have to stand on a block or on some cushions. Listen, maybe it's not completely accurate, but the mental image of that is just way too good not to think about. So I had to share it with everyone. The next anecdote is that Rick has an extremely famous line which he repeats 4 times in the movie. A line that is endlessly satisfying to say anytime you take a swig of any drink. And it's, "Here's looking at you, kid." This line was actually never in the draft screenplays. It was attributed to an actual comment Bogart made to Bergman while he was teaching her to play poker. And I feel like that makes the line 100% more awesome because it was actually genuine. So honestly, I was mind blown when I read that. I think that's so awesome. I just thought those were some really great anecdotes that were definitely worth mentioning. But now it's time to look at the themes of the movie. So one of the themes in the movie is that of time. And by time, I mean the past, the present, and the future. There are many instances in the movie where the characters attempt to escape from their past. First in Paris, when Ilsa and Rick meet and they decide not to ask about each other's pasts. They are blissfully happy for a while, but when the Germans occupy Paris, Rick can no longer ignore his past because he's on the German blacklist and so he has to get away from Paris. Ilsa is also confronted with the past when she finds out that Laszlo has actually survived and she decides not to leave with Rick. Then Rick decides to open up a joint and tries to forget what happened as he grows more and more cynical every day. But in the end, his idealism from the past remains untouched in him, and that is what ends up determining his actions. So although the characters try to escape from their past, they actually can't. And it's also as if everything they've done in the past is inextricably linked with what they'll do in the future. For example, Rick had previously helped in the Italo-Ethiopian War and also in the Spanish Civil War on the Republican side, and this clearly demonstrates that his loyalties did not lie with the fascists. He claims to be a cynic, but everything he has done in the past points at the decision he'll make when the time comes to make it. The attitude towards the past and having to escape from it changes at the end, however, when Rick and Ilsa are saying goodbye and Rick reminds her that they will always have Paris. And it's a bittersweet moment because although it's in the past, they can remember it fondly and be filled with the same feelings of love and affection as they had. And for once, they're not escaping from the past, but they're embracing it. Another theme in the movie is that of commitment. And it's a theme that questions the notion of commitment. And it's basically asking, how does one keep a commitment with someone when the world is falling apart at the seams, when everything is uncertain, when the future seems non-existent and there's destruction everywhere? Keeping up relationship with someone you love means nurturing that relationship, looking after it as if it were a plant, giving it water and helping it grow. How do you do that in the middle of a war when nothing is being looked after, everything's just being destroyed and everything's pretty much falling apart? And, well, that's the question. How do you keep that commitment? And here's where we get to the really interesting thing about the movie. The movie's answer to how you're supposed to keep up a relationship with someone you deeply love is you don't. For once, love doesn't win. Casablanca acknowledges that there are things that are more important than true love when there is a war going on and people are dying. Rick and Ilsa know they have to sacrifice their love for the greater cause, which is that of fighting fascism, which Ilsa would be able to do with Laszlo, who was obviously a very prominent leader in an important resistance movement. I should probably say it's not that Casablanca is exactly saying that true love doesn't matter, but it's changing the notion of how true love should be manifested. So for example, our notion of true love is the two lovers ending up together happily ever after, right? That's basically the classic ending in many Hollywood movies. But in this case, Casablanca is defining the notion of true love in different ways, and how manifesting true love in this case is Rick telling Ilsa to get on that plane. So the true love is being manifested in a different way than we're used to, and that's the spice of Casablanca. It's nice. This idea of a sacrifice being made in the name of true love is manifested in Rick's very famous quote when he says, "It doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world." So it's basically saying that our love right now is not the important thing. For once, you know, it's not the end all. You know, there are bigger things out there, which is very interesting when you think about it, because you don't see that angle very much, you know, even back in the day, but even now in our society, this love is exalted and loving relationships are exalted. They're seen as the most important thing imaginable. But that isn't the case. I think the fact that the ending is so unlike lots of classic Hollywood movies where the two characters deeply in love don't end up together is what really makes Casablanca a particularly memorable movie. I do feel, though, that I have the responsibility to kind of break that magical romantic image of Ilsa's and Rick's sacrifice because, yes, it was definitely a refreshing twist, but the movie could not have actually ended any other way, as due to the production code guidelines, it was impossible for a woman to leave a husband for another man, which, you know, kind of ruins it in a way. But anyhow, if you ignore that minor detail, it's still a really powerful ending, and honestly, you can't really take that away. So now let's look at some symbols. A hugely significant symbol throughout the movie is Sam's piano. Lots of the people who go to Rick's cafe are drawn to the piano, and this isn't only because of Sam, who's a very admirable character, because of his loyalty, obviously, to Rick and his kindness, but also because of the music, which acts as a sort of soothing balm in times of hardship. And honestly, I think that's pretty universal. Music to calm the nerves, to bring peace, to bring happiness. I feel like the times we're living right now are a great time to be listening to a lot of music. But because of this music that sort of cleanses and makes things peaceful, the piano becomes a symbol of purity. And it's so pure, in fact, that Louis doesn't even think to look in the piano or near the piano for the letters that Rick hid in there and which Louis knew were somewhere in the premises. The piano in Sam's music is also a symbol of Rick's heart. When Sam plays the song which Rick had forbidden him to play, Rick's heart starts thumping again, if you'll forgive me for the cheesiness of that statement. And because of all the emotions that song brings to him and makes him remember all the loving memories he had of Ilsa. So yes, I apologize, that was very cheesy, but it's true. Laszlo himself is more than just a character, he is also a symbol. Laszlo represents the resistance, the fight against the fascists. Whether he can get out of Casablanca or not is much more significant than just that. It's almost a question of whether he stands a chance to win or not against the enemy. The fact that he already managed to escape from a concentration camp shows that the Nazis' control over Europe is not absolute. And he represents dissidents in the face of an authoritarian power, and he represents hope. So Laszlo is definitely a very important symbol in the movie. Then there's the spotlight. There's a spotlight which is constantly circling and shining, making it known that everyone is constantly being watched. The light crosses Laszlo's path after he leaves Rick's cafe with Ilsa, showing how vulnerable and how he can easily be discovered and stopped. Another instance is just as Ilsa opens the door to enter Rick's cafe, the light passes by, illuminating her brilliantly from behind. She appears almost angelic, and this enables us to see her the way that Rick sees her, as someone utterly in love with her, and she appears to us as being almost ethereal. It also serves to say that Ilsa and Rick are also being monitored, and that the only way to keep Ilsa safe and away from that spotlight, which figuratively means her capture, is to send her away to America. Now, another reason why this movie is so famous is because of the acting. Every actor in this movie is distinct and does their job so powerfully. You have Ingrid Bergman, who just by flickering her eyes subtly to the left as she listens to Sam play the piano, can transmit so much nostalgia and pain that is breathtaking, and she just takes us back to that moment in Paris. Then you have Bogart, who is so precise in his movements and the words he says, always with that super characteristic voice of his, which just adds another layer to his character's dimension, showing his cynical side. Then you have Claude Rains, who has this sort of mischievous flair to him that he just does so damn well. I think Claude Rains is an amazing actor. And Dooley Wilson, who radiates warmth and draws people into his haven of comfort and peace created by his music. It's some seriously awesome and stunning acting, and it's no wonder that this is such an important factor of why Casablanca is considered to be such a classic. So yes, we've been discussing what makes Casablanca a great movie, but Casablanca did not escape from criticism. When it came out, the New Yorker's review was simply, it was pretty tolerable, which I find absolutely hilarious. Even one of the screenwriters said that the movie had more corn than in the state of Kansas and Iowa combined. But then he said that when corn works, well, there's nothing better. So, you know, kind of a criticism, but also not really. It was a great way to put it, honestly. And then there is a famous Italian novelist, Umberto Eco, who wrote that Casablanca was a very mediocre film and that it was riddled with cliches. Although he did end up saying that it was worthy of some admiration in the end because it had Homeric depth, which is a pretty damn good compliment, honestly. Eco also made a comment that I found very interesting. He said that two cliches in a movie annoy us, but hundreds of cliches in a movie move us. And I think I can understand this because one of my favorite movies is Roman Holiday. And even though I do think that some things are very far from cliches, like the ending, for example, I do have to admit that it's full of cliches, but it still moves me very much. So I think he had a point there, but I thought it was very interesting and I thought I'd share. And obviously I'll be talking about Roman Holiday one day because, as I said, one of my favorite movies and it's definitely worth talking about. But anyhow, back to Casablanca. Casablanca, a work of art or just overrated? Hey, maybe neither one or the other, or maybe both. There are many things about this movie that are striking and memorable, but I don't blame people for asking the question of what makes this movie so famous and such a classic. Once you delve into it a little bit more, you start to appreciate it, so I'm glad I was able to do a little more research on the movie and make this episode so that I could get to the story behind Casablanca. And honestly, it does make you appreciate it a little bit more. So if you're ever in doubt about a movie and why it's so famous, just look it up a little bit and who knows, maybe you'll still be disappointed or maybe you'll be surprised. But it's definitely worth looking into it. Anyhow, I hope you have enjoyed this episode. As I said, I enjoyed looking into it and finding out more about this movie. And I'd just like to let anyone know that I am happy to hear from anybody if anybody has a comment or I don't know if somebody would like to leave me a suggestion to watch a movie or to talk about one. I'll be happy to do so. But for now, I hope everyone's fine and I hope to be able to upload on a more regular basis. I literally have no excuse at the moment, but I sometimes get way too disorganized And I also apologize that I don't have a regular day where I post. I guess I still am not ready to make that decision because it seems kind of daunting. So you can't escape that, ready? You can't escape that deadline. But anyhow, I will definitely try to be more punctual at least. And I hope everyone's fine. And thank you so much for listening. Have a great evening.